everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show. And get ready. This could be the weekend that will send us into historic territory, making it the wettest monsoon on record. Tom,
have you had a chance to check the records?
I have.
Oh, good man.
I haven't. Okay, real quickly, because we have so much to talk about with our guest today. We're at about 10 inches for the monsoon season, which puts us in the top 10. We would need 13 inches to be the wettest. But if they were doing it at my house, we're at 15 inches already unofficially, and that's not uncommon for lots of places.
I heard that 1983 was the year.
Well, that was the year you're talking about for the wettest year ever, which
total?
Is over
okay.
20 inches. That's not just
that's the calendar year.
Yeah, the okay. calendar year.
Okay.
Anyway, it's Buckmaster on a Friday, August the 13th. Who cares? I'm not superstitious. Tim Stoller.
Oh,
with
man,
the,
don't tempt
Friday
fate.
The 13th. No, I know. Anyway, we must move on. Buckmaster in our 10th year right here on the radio. Oh, my goodness. Coming 11th year will be will be 11 full years the first week of January next year. After 22 years on TV, that's a long time here in Tucson. Our radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our studio, we're proud our naming rights go to Green Things. We love Green Things and Zocalo Village. Also, we love our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith. I know Dylan's listening, and we've had a great relationship. The Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, a great relationship there with Dan Shear, the Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio publications, Jim Ninsel, our friend for a long time at the Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. And one of our good friends is with me in studio. He is the 2019 Arizona Press Club Columnist of the Year, well-deserved, very talented newspaper writer in general, Tim Stoller. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hey, thanks. That's nice of you to say.
Well, no, you're good at what you do. Our Friday Focus interview is the chairman-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents, Fred Duvall, who was appointed by Governor Ducey in November of 2018 to an 8-year term on the board, which is that board charged with overseeing Arizona's three state universities. Regent Duvall was the 2014 Democratic nominee for governor of the state of Arizona. He's currently president of Duvall and Associates. This is his second stint on the Board of Regents, having served from 2006 to 2012 when he was appointed by Governor Janet Napolitano. Fred is founder of the Institute for Civil Discord at the University of Arizona, also architect of an interesting new initiative, Arizona Teachers Academy, which offers students covered tuition and fees for their program of study if they agree to teach in Arizona public schools. Fred, good to catch up with you again. How are you?
Terrific. Bill, good to be with you again. And Tim, and appreciate both of your service to the community, my hometown, and congratulations on 11 years.
Yeah, 11 years coming up and 22 on TV. So that's long timer, a lot of history in this community. It's very serendipitous, Fred, to have you on the show today in light of our three state universities. We'll be requiring everyone on campus to have their face coverings inoculated or not. And this move, we've got now Pima Community College here in town and Maricopa Community College, the two largest of our community colleges in the state of Arizona. And there have been some large school districts right here in Tucson. TUSD is also going with their own mask mandate. How do you view this, Fred Duvall, in light of the governor's executive order that appears to preclude the action being taken by the three state universities?
Sure. Well, first, a modest clarification. The policy that the three universities have adopted, and I'm assuming it's true for the community colleges as well, is that the mask requirement will exist where physical spacing can't exist. So, that little sort of important distinction. I think the right place to start this discussion is what's the goal? The goal is to keep the universities open. The learning loss that occurred over the last year because of COVID is significant. It's now been, proven in research. And so what we are seeking to do is make sure that the universities are as open as possible, that faculty will come to work, that the students can be in an environment where they can learn and be ready for joining the workforce. So goal one is getting open. Second is getting open safely. And so striking the right balance around how do we use what we know to be true, that masking works, how do we promote vaccination as aggressively as possible, how do we test when necessary, how do we create quarantine protocols. You know, those are all tools of making sure that we open safely. And third, that we do it within the context of the law. Which goes to your point about the executive order and the subsequent law. We believe that we are within the law in taking this step, and so we are proceeding with all three goals.
Hello, it's Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Quick question on that. You said that you referred to it as we being, in conformance with the law. Were you consulted, or were you as a board involved in the decision-making process as to creating these policies for the various universities?
Yes. I mean, we are a governing policy board, not a management board. And so, the presidents lead their universities, but, do it in a way that is in alignment with us, checking with us. We have a role to sort of define the big picture governance policy for the universities. So in that regard, they consulted us, and this policy, this approach has our blessing.
So in other words, in an informal way, they reached out to you, and or was it formal? I guess what I'm asking is, did you, as a board, take a vote, for example,
that's approve, right?
But you were you discussed it as leaders of the board, or maybe as a whole board, with the presidents of the universities.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, exactly.
Fred, let me ask you about vaccine requirements. I know that at one point the president of ASU, Dr. Crow, wanted to move in that direction. I think Dr. Robbins has indicated he would be amenable to that. I don't know about the NAU situation, but in light of what happened with the Supreme Court yesterday declining a request to block Indiana University's vaccine mandate, do you think the universities could move toward a vaccine mandate, Fred Duvall?
Yeah. The presidents have expressed, and the board agrees, that the more vaccination, the better. We would prefer to have a uniform vaccination requirement. That would be our policy preference. But in lieu of that, and given that the executive order and the law is explicit and unambiguous about that issue, we are seeking to be in compliance with state law and with the executive order. And so we are moving aggressively in a number of ways around promoting vaccines on campus, using a variety of incentives, drawings and lotteries and, a variety of tools. And we're very encouraged by what we're seeing. It appears that we will have an incoming class that could have a vaccination rate of 80% or possibly higher. So we're making real tracks on vaccination and promoting it as aggressively as we can, but within the context of not violating what is a really unambiguous instruction that the state does not give us permission to do so.
Can you go deeper into that 80% figure? How do you mean that your incoming class could have up to or 80% vaccination rate?
Yeah, and I don't know the protocols of how they're determining that, sort of what the I think the students are self-reporting. I do know that the faculty is reporting. So we're capturing that data, and the trend lines look like by next week, we will be somewhere around the 80% figure at U of A. I haven't gotten the ASU figure, but in anticipation of this conversation about the U of A figure. So And that is in advance of arrival. They will be met with a very robust, you know, set of incentives and promotions and, you know, a community expectation and ubiquitous availability of providing the vaccine to try and drive that number higher.
Now, I haven't heard a lot about this, maybe just because I'm not listening to sports talk radio 24/7, but I'm just wondering about the start of the football stadium. Will we see full stadiums, or will there be any kind of requirements of fans going to the games at the three state universities?
You know, Bill, it's top of mind. Don't have an answer for you yet, under active discussion. The what we call the ancillary revenue to the university, sports and other things, was eviscerated. It was slaughtered last year. And I'm sure you guys covered it in some of your programming. You know, the budget impacts of the loss of the ancillary revenue was dramatic. We really don't want to see that again. And yet, obviously, we want to have a safe environment. So that discussion is robust and it's happening now, but do not have it resolved.
And as far as the budget, what did going online cost the universities?
There's a significant upfront investment, both in the technology and in the, you know, the training environment and making sure that the faculty have what they need to succeed in that setting. So there was a significant upfront environment. So we were hit simultaneously with really sort of a perfect storm. One, a loss of enrollment, particularly out-of-state students and foreign students, which are a very good revenue capture for us. Second is loss of ancillary revenue from football and, of course, in Tucson basketball. Enormous losses, combined with the requirement for us to finance the costs of the movement to remote and all of the, you know, new science and research for which the University of Arizona is receiving national praise around, you know, new testing systems and, you know, a variety of other sort of research that took place, making that available to Pima County and beyond the campus. So there was both a significant loss of revenue and a huge increase of cost. So it was a very rough year.
Building projects were put on hold, I understand, some of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anything that didn't have to happen was postponed.
What is the enrollment picture looking like? I'm hearing that it's tough this year, too.
It is. Actually, you know, we're modestly encouraged. It appears that we will have stable or modest growth. Now, that is said, I think we start class middle of next week. You know, that said, knowing that there may be some loss in the decisions to be occurring at people's family kitchen tables over the next week. But based upon deposit, looks like we're going to have modest growth. And statewide, in terms of the three universities, absolutely, we should have probably between a 2 and 3% statewide enrollment growth.
Well, a follow-up to that about enrollment, the headline in Tim's paper here in town, the Arizona Daily Star, the fastest-growing big city in the United States is where you are right now, Fred Duvall, the Valley of the Sun. How, you know, long term, how does that impact Arizona higher education?
It's just hugely significant. You know, I was giving you the statewide figures. ASU will be up 4.5% on its immersion enrollment and up 9% with its online enrollment. So that reflects both their marketing around the country on their online platform, but it really just simply reflects that they're continuing to capture the market share that organically presents itself in Maricopa County.
Going into the future, this pandemic experience obviously changed a lot of things and showed us a lot of different ways of doing business. How are you all grappling with the ideas of remote learning, even for students who are on campus? I mean, are all classes going to be, you know, optional physical presence from now on? How do you see that issue going forward at the universities?
Yeah, Tim, it's a great question. I mean, you know, everybody was moving to remote for a variety of reasons anyway, but COVID put it in superdrive. I mean, just dramatic. And we've learned a lot of things. We've learned that if properly done, the quality of the product, the quality of the education is as good. It can be more accessible once the core structure investment technology investment is made, you know, it can be more cost effective. So all of that is really attractive. It becomes more seamless because you can obviously move between different campuses, both community colleges and universities. I mean, there's a lot of you can actually, you know, do out of state and in state. So the seamless nature is very attractive. So all of that is to the good. The challenge is that because by its nature, it is sort of borderless, students will be picking between, you know, Southern New Hampshire University, Western Governors University, Arizona State, University of Arizona, et cetera. And in that environment, a whole set of new questions about how do you create brand, pricing, content distinctions that maintain market share. And what will inevitably happen, I believe, a lot of people believe, is that the online dynamic will be similar to what's happening with insurance and airlines and other large mass scale consumer products, where marketing power driven by the availability of dollars, that you will have a compression. You'll have, you know, a handful, I don't know, 10 or whatever, national branded offerings. And it'll be very tough for the smaller schools to maintain a viable online marketplace. But all that's to be seen. And what we're trying to do, to be more precise about answering your question, the real goal is how do we meet students where they are? I mean, it used to be sort of, you know, like going to the doctor's office. You come to us, you come to our bricks and mortar, you take the product that we offer. That's all being blown up. And what now has to happen and is happening is different price points, different products delivered different ways, meeting different students because, you know, the profile of the 18 to 22-year-old student coming for 4 years, that's just not what it is anymore. Adult learners, lots of people who've had a year or two of college want to get a little bit more. So making sure that we meet students' needs wherever they are, whoever they are, whatever age they are, whatever their work situation is.
All right, Fred Duvall, the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents. Fred, stay where you are. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back with Tim Steller, and we'll continue our discussion about higher education in the times of COVID right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCare2UAZ.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview today, Fred Duvall, the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents, and Tim Steller is here from the Arizona Daily Star. Looking back at the decision to purchase that online university right before the pandemic hit, Fred, was that a good decision? Do we have Fred back with us? Fred, are you there? No, we lost Fred. Okay, while we get Fred back on the phone, Tim, he was talking about the branding of the University of Arizona. So how do you sell the U of A in an online world?
Yeah, that's the thing. The thing that I find difficult is the concept of a university where so much of the money brought in, especially from students, is brought in by people coming to campus. To live there and, you know, live in the dorms in many cases, especially for the younger students, or if not, you know, coming into town to live and pay tuition, coming in from California, primarily from, that's the main state we get people from. And while it sounds like the university is well positioned for the online idea and is pursuing it well, what about financially, you know? Can we make that difference up from the people who used to come physically?
And we've got Fred Duvall back with us. Fred, how are we going to make up that difference? And we lost him again. Oh, I don't know what's going on. Oh, boy. Oh, I jinxed myself. At the
Friday
beginning
the 13th,
of the show, my goodness, why did I ever make fun of
Friday?
You said I was tempting fate. But I'm not quite sure what's going on with the phone line, but that will be our first question when we get him back on the line here about how do you make up for that lost revenue.
Well, another issue that I find interesting I'd like to revisit with him is this question of whether they are truly adhering to the law as the executive order of the governor and the law as the legislature passed it. Strikes me that it's actually borderline whether they are adhering to the law. Certainly they can't require vaccines because the law says that. But separate from that, the mask requirements also strike me as violating the law. Now, maybe they've written the regulation closely enough to the loopholes that the governor won't challenge it or can't challenge it without a political cost. But, these are appointees of the governor in the Board of Regents. So Fred Duvall himself is an appointee of the governor. I think the vast majority of them, if not all of them, are at this point. And he, the governor, and his administration can't see it as anything but a challenge to his, policy position. I mean, that's the position he took. And it is a collision course if the governor chooses to pursue the conflict.
I think we've got Fred back. Fred, are you with us?
Yes, so sorry for that. Lost the call.
I should never, ever have made fun of Friday the 13th, Fred Duvall.
Exactly.
See, that's what happens. So a couple of items here about Tim was talking while we were getting you back on. How does the University of Arizona make up for the lost revenue that has happened here if we're going more to this kind of hybrid with the online? The cost of that, there's got to be a difference.
We are charging the same and holding the online programs to the same expectations in terms of the quality of the product. And of course, you know, properly run universities maintain a level of cash on hand that can be used as a, you know, head against semesters. And that's what we did. And we did it before we, everything that was very on hold during the tough budget. And I do want to give President Robbins a lot of credit for this. The legislature this year, you know, over the last 20 years, it's been sort of a process of de-investment. But last year's investment from the legislature was pretty positive, north of $100 million. And Bobby Robbins really worked hard to accomplish that. And that really gives us a floor against the risks of the fall semester.
Tim, go ahead with your other point that you wanted to make that we were talking about while we waited for Fred to come back.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've stated that a vaccine mandate is clearly prohibited by the new law and the previous executive order. But is it not also the case that the mask mandate, as even as framed by the universities, is against the spirit of the law that the university, I'm sorry, that the legislature passed and that the governor had previously ordered?
Tim, let's see if Fred is back with us. Fred is having trouble.
Yeah, we've had some serious phone trouble there.
Yeah, I think it might be with his
ghost in the machine.
It could be a ghost with his machine.
I think it is.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, after all, Fred was appointed by the governor, right?
Right.
Governor Ducey.
And so, he has made a point to make common cause with the governor on some issues, such as the Teachers Academy that you mentioned. And it's, you know, it's a kind of an effort to reach out and be bipartisan and all that.
Okay, we've got Fred back. So
we do, guys. I'm outside, and I hope it'll help. I do apologize.
Okay,
now where were we?
Okay, Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was asking, is it not against the spirit of the legislature's law and the governor's order to have these new mask mandates that you have in the universities now?
Yeah, it's an understandable question. I'm not in a position to speculate on legislative intent. I can just tell you that by the language of the law and the executive order, it's set out by its terms that we not apply separate requirements on anybody else, and a uniform policy, not discriminating vaccinated and unvaccinated students. And so we think we are in compliance with the law.
I want to ask about the Teacher Academy. I talked about it in the introduction. Are you having some good success in getting students to commit to teaching in Arizona?
It's fantastic. We have 3,000 students who are participating in the Teachers Academy, and what it seeks to do is, you know, we all are all very familiar with what's happening in our classroom with the loss of teachers. One-third of teachers don't stay 3 years. Very hard to keep them, and really hard, based on what we pay them, for any teacher to be able to pay back their student loans. So this program provides 1 year of tuition in exchange for 1 year of teaching, but that can be 2, 3, or 4 years on the payback. And we have 3,000 students participating, and so what we are seeking to do is grow the program to the point where we can meet the need to make sure that every classroom in Arizona has a good teacher.
Also, I wanted to ask you about the creation. I believe that was the Institute for Civil Discord at the University of Arizona. You were kind of the founder of that. Wasn't that the institute that was created after the Tucson shooting tragedies?
That's right. Yeah.
How is that going?
Sounds like we've lost him again. Well, by the way, it's not civil discord, it's civil discourse.
Civil discourse.
Yes. Yeah. Although
Thank
civil
you.
Discord is also, you know, a skill that we should all learn.
I tell you. Oh, boy, Buckmaster, you really jinxed it, making fun of Friday the 13th, and hopefully Fred will call us back. It sounds like, Tom, did you want to say something? He said he was outdoors.
Yeah.
Oh, no? Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I can tell you about the weather if that's what you want me to do, because that's my main concern beyond Fred Duvall's interview.
Yeah, but... Are you kind of surprised that that institute is even still around?
I mean,
for civil discourse.
Yeah. Well.
I said discourse.
There's a lot of need for it, I suppose. Oh, but I don't know if the Trump era kind of eviscerated the demand for civil discourse. Certainly, it's been overwhelmed. The desire for civil discourse has been overwhelmed by the desire to fight.
All right. Fred Duvall is back with us. He says he has...
You'll never have me on again. I've got four bars. I'm going to stick with you.
Okay.
So yeah, this, you know, as a Tucsonan, I was immediately seized by the fear that the shooting would brand Tucson much the way that, you know, Dallas was branded by the Kennedy assassination. I thought, God, we've got to turn this into something that is positive and good. And so we created this institute. Bill Clinton, George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Katie Couric. I mean, we went out after a whole bunch of people to kind of give it instant credibility. It's still, you know, moving forward. You know, I picked up what Tim was just saying, and it's exactly right. I mean, the quality of the political discourse is only getting worse. So the need for these kinds of discussions is ever more important.
Let me ask you a political question about the Democratic Party here in Arizona. You've seen these new census numbers. Does it play more to the notion we are going to be a purple state, Fred Duvall?
I think so. I mean, that's certainly the trend lines. But, you know, I recognize that, you know, the last election was pretty schizophrenic. You know, Kelly, and before that, 2 years before, you know, Hobbs and Hoffman and Sinema and Biden. But at the same time, you know, there was not a loss of, I think there was a loss of one Republican legislative seat. I think it really continues to confirm that some people would call it purple. I would call it iconoclastic and a little unpredictable and wildly independent. And I think up for grabs in each and every season.
It's a good thing, it sounds like. I mean, the suburban dwellers, especially the suburban women who the presidential campaigns felt they were fighting over last year. Last campaign. And those were like the Maricopa County suburbs, the eastern suburbs of Phoenix, that were our Arizona example of that. I wonder if that's going to be the case again in 3 years, or if there's some other demographic niche of Arizona and this other swing states that become kind of the swing demographic.
Sure. I think that the suburban areas will remain the key demographic, and within them, women are, you know, the key swing demographic. And then secondly is, you know, we've been talking about the emergence of the Latino electorate for many, many years in Arizona, but it has really sort of taken ownership of its role in our state and in our communities, engaging, participating, registering, voting in ways that we haven't seen before. And what remains to be seen is whether or not that was you know, a function of immigration and Trump and sort of the dynamics of the last few years, or whether or not that is now a permanent component of the Arizona electorate. I would bet it is the latter.
Going back to the university system and the whole, we talked about maybe the diminishing role of the traditional brick and mortar institution. And I know that the Board of Regents always has a long list, or has been in the past, of building projects. You mentioned that those projects pretty much are on hold. Will there be a second, maybe even a third look on whether or not, Fred Duvall, these projects are needed?
Yes. I think there is now a different lens. there will always be need for research space for the kinds of really significant solutions-oriented research that the universities are doing. So those investments will continue. There's need for technology space. There's need for new supercomputing, to be sure. So, you know, there are a variety of things. You know, it's hard to teach a lot of the medical fields online. There are certain things that we've got to continue to do. What does change? You know, you're not going to see a lot of enthusiasm for us building dorms on our nickel. You know, there are risk factors around the assumption of immersion learning that we certainly don't want to take the risk on. And if the private sector wants to, you know, that's a conversation to be had. But we're definitely moving towards using third-party capital in areas of risk, given the new realities that we face.
Tim, do you have a final quick question?
I'm all set, Joe.
Okay, you're all
I was reading the word Joe. So
there you
Joe.
Go. Before we go, Fred Duvall, one of your friends, longtime friend, Steve Christie, was my guest here in studio yesterday, Pima County Supervisor, and he said to give his regards to you, because I guess you guys were like best friends, pals here in Tucson growing up in second grade or something like that.
That's right. Third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, we rode our bikes to Sam Hughes and school together every day. Yeah, absolutely. So that's very charming. I appreciate that.
All right.
And I would say, you know, one of your other frequent guests, you know, grew up swimming with Bruce Ash at Tucson High School.
Wow. There you go. I'm sure you miss Tucson.
Oh, look, very much so. You know, obviously, being a Regent, I get there a lot, and I've got family there. My in-laws, the Heckers, are there. So, you know, it's still very much a part of my life, always will be.
All right. Fred Duvall, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. And again, apologize for the technology.
All right. We will look forward to our next visit. Fred Duvall, the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our Friday the 13th edition continues with Tim Steller. We'll talk a little bit right after the break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Hopefully, well, since Tim's in studio, Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star, don't have to worry about his live line going in and out, because we've got five, instead of four bars, we've got all five bars on your microphone.
Yeah,
open.
It's working, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. I made a little fun of Friday the 13th, so sorry about that. But anyway, we got some very good content, and it's very timely having Fred Duvall on about.
Sure. And
I mean, he was appointed by the governor. What does the governor think, I wonder, about this mask mandate?
Well, he's got to be careful because, you know, his order and then the legislature's law appeal to a group that is very skeptical of masks and vaccines, plus a bit of a libertarian, you know, faction. But I think there's also a large number of people in Arizona who want the universities and the schools to be able to do what they feel they need, especially the schools, because the schools deal with teach students under the vaccine eligible age. So, you know, they can't even get the vaccine. So no wonder. So, of course, schools are trying to find other ways to protect the students and keep the doors, you know, keep the schools running. I feel like Ducey and the legislature are appealing to a minority faction that's important in the Republican Party, but is probably not dominant in the state. And they're getting blowback because the dominant faction in the state is the people on this issue. The dominant faction is a group that wants these institutions to be able to implement the policies that they feel they need.
Yeah. I want to move on to the column that you're working on for Sunday. I love to kind of follow the weather. In fact, I write a little bit about it on Facebook and been monitoring what's been going on. We've had approximately 15 inches, which is crazy, up at our home in the lower foothills. Others have had more. Others have had less, like the airport, where the official total has been still. It's putting it in, you know, the wettest July ever. This is almost a preview of life in climate change.
Yeah. So,
or maybe in real time we're watching.
Yeah, it's not a preview. We are living it. Yeah. So what I'm learning about is what they refer to as the whiplash effect or whiplash weather, which is extremes in weather that rapidly succeed each other. In other words, abrupt changes between different kinds of extremes. And believe it or not, that's been talked about for some time as a possible consequence of the warming of Earth's climate. And, you know, there's simple explanations for that. Warmer air can hold more water vapor.
Right.
And so so it's not surprising that when you have really hot, dry air and then a lot of humidity moves in, a lot of moisture moves in, then it can hold more water and therefore you can have more precipitation. So here we are. We were meandering through an increasingly scary drought with several seasons in a row without adequate or even close to normal rain. Mm-hmm. And then that came to a screeching halt at the end of June, which was, I believe, the hottest June on record.
Right.
We had a whole week of 115 or so.
You're correct. You're correct.
It's hard to even remember this stuff.
I know.
And it was six weeks ago.
The drought monitoring thing showed... exceptional, the highest category. Right,
we were in extreme drought across the state.
And it's now dropped down to almost mid-level and dropping.
And it's just insanity. The other night, Tuesday night, which was for most of Tucson the night when we had the strongest storms.
That was a 5-incher that lasted 4 hours up at our place from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Oh, that's how much rain you got?
That we had 5 inches.
Yeah, and you know what? Most people would... These weather nerds like me would hear that and go, it's probably not true. But I've been looking around like at the rain log website, and you'll see there's a whole stripe of the east side of Tucson that got 3 to 5 plus inches that night.
Some had 6.
I was trying to go to sleep like probably most of Tucson that night. It was absolutely impossible.
Very little sleep for me.
And I was drifting off, and I started to think of, between claps of thunder, I was starting to think about Hurricane Harvey in Houston and how much rain did it take for those whole streets to start flowing like rivers, that was the turning point between just loving all this rain and starting to get a little worried about all this rain.
Actually anxious, and my wife, who slept pretty much slept through it until she saw me standing, or she says, "You can't change this. You can't control everything, Bill. So try to come back and go to sleep." You know, I've only got about a minute, right, Tom? About a minute left. But I remember Jonathan Overpeck in an interview that I did with him. Overpeck, one of the big futurist weather gurus who left the University of Arizona to go to Ann Arbor, to the University of Michigan. And I remember him taught, this must have been the late 90s. He was so far ahead of the game on this. And he said one of the scenarios that's very possible is Tucson could actually be getting more and more precipitation rather than the other way.
Yeah. And
so are we going to become...
Or it could shift seasonally. In other words, we could go to having wetter summers and drier winters, or vice versa. We just don't know how this is going to shake out.
Anyway, I'll look for your column. Thank you very much for coming in, Tim.
Thanks for indulging me, and happy Friday the 13th.
Yeah, we always enjoy Friday the 13th. All right, we'll be back with Weekend Watch with Matt Russell.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan,
the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Time for Weekend Watch, Friday the 13th edition with award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business / Tucson Weekly food and beverage columnist Matt Russell, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Take the three-hour road trip east of Tucson to Silver City, where during the noon hour, 66 degrees and a rain shower. It's lovely in Silver City. The Gila National Wilderness has never looked better. So green, so lush. Go to Southwest New Mexico.org. Start your planning now about where to stay, and there's some great places to stay and no shortage of things to do. And there's never a shortage of things to do here in Tucson, right, Matt Russell?
Absolutely. Now, don't say Friday the 13th again, because I've found just the right signal and I'm standing here like a statue to make sure that I don't disrupt this conversation.
Yeah, what a goofball I am to make fun of Friday the 13th and the Buckmaster Show open today. Hey, prickly pear harvest time is here.
Yeah, you know it's August in Tucson. The prickly pear cactus fruits have that beautiful deep purple hue that tells us it's harvest time. And if you've ever wondered, Bill, how to really harvest and juice these fruits, the International Wildlife Museum out on Gates Pass Road, they're going to be hosting a workshop tonight at 5:30. So you're going to be able to walk around the museum grounds, collect the fruit, bring it inside to process it like a pro, all while learning tips and techniques from museum staff. You're also going to get to bring home all the juice that you made. So reservations are required. Check out thewildlifemuseum.org for all the details.
Hey, is Chef Janos Wilder doing any of those cooking classes again, Matt Russell?
Yeah, you know what? He has been so busy down at the Carriage House all summer long, and Summer's Bounty will take center stage at his Cooking a Summer Bounty class tomorrow from 10 to noon. It's an online class, as you said, and he's going to demonstrate how to create some modern dishes consisting of wild and ancient ingredients like shoya buds and mesquite beans, while talking about really the cultural importance of desert food plants. Information and a registration link can be found at eventbrite.com. Just look for Cooking a Summer Bounty with Janos Wilder.
So excited for our longtime friends at Noble Hops.
I'm telling you, it appears that one is definitely not enough for this hungry community. The team at Jam Culinary Concepts, of course, no stranger to your audience, has decided to open up its second location this Sunday at the Doubletree Reed Park Hotel on Alvernon. This is a destination for craft beer and fine fare. They're going to take over that space for decades. Was the Javelina Cantina. I remember it well. And I think Midtowners are going to rejoice in their chef-driven menu. My go-to on this menu is the seared ahi BLT, multiple Ooh. Beer pairings to go Ooh. With that kind of stuff. So I say make Sunday fun day at the new Noble Hops this weekend.
What's the read on Inside Tucson Business?
Yeah, you know, in preparation for my 10th year as a judge at what USA Today has called the best barbecue festival in the country, it's a rib cook-off in Nevada on Labor Day weekend, I sat down with a local pitmaster who shared some secrets behind her award-winning ribs, and those secrets are revealed in this week's edition of Inside Tucson.
We will look for it. Have a great rest of the day, Matt.
You do the same. Thanks, Matt.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to everyone here, including Tom Fairbanks and the whole team at Bustos Media.